Have you ever found yourself in that situation? You know, you've got this pile of reports, articles, research, all about some massive, really complex industry, and you just need to cut through the noise. You feel like you're drowning in data, but you've got to grasp the critical insights, like now, before your brain just gives up. It's a common challenge when you're trying to get truly well-informed, isn't it? Well, that's exactly what we're diving into today. Welcome to the Deep Dive. Imagine trying to get a really sharp picture of an entire multi-trillion dollar industry managed care organizations, or MCOs. Our goal today is to take these detailed sources you've given us and just pull out the most important nuggets for you. We're looking at what's actually going on with the companies managing your health plans, how they make money or maybe struggle to, and the huge evolving challenges they're facing right now. It's an intricate world that touches pretty much everyone.
It really is. And what's fascinating, like looking through this material, is that the MCO sector isn't just, you know, evolving slowly. It seems to be right at a critical inflection point. For years, the way MCOs made profits, things like aggressive utilization management or just riding the growth wave in government programs, well, those ways aren't working like they used to. So our mission today is to pull out those key insights, help you understand the big structural pressures, who the main players are, and critically, where long-term value might actually be created in this shifting landscape. We'll dig into how regulatory changes, medical cost inflation, which is relentless, and big strategic shifts are reshaping everything.
And to help us navigate all this complexity, our insights are drawn from a pretty comprehensive MCO investment analysis framework, plus a whole bunch of related industry reports. So this isn't just a quick look. It's a deep, granular examination. Financials, strategy, the works. It gives us a really unique lens, hopefully, to cut through that noise for you. An industry at an inflection point. The big picture. Okay, so let's start with that core challenge. Our sources call it a managed care gauntlet. That phrase really paints a picture, doesn't it? It suggests this treacherous path full of obstacles, and it perfectly captures this idea that the old ways of making profit, you know, aggressive utilization management, which is basically MCOs checking if care is really needed, or just simple growth in government plans. That's all under fire now. It's not just one thing. It's this convergence, this confluence of regulatory intervention, post-pandemic market normalization, and persistent medical cost inflation. Any one of those would be tough, but altogether, that's a demanding environment.
Exactly. And putting that into the bigger picture, it means creating value isn't just about having broad market exposure anymore, or simply adding more members. That's
yes.
Cool. Well, it's not enough. The sources make it pretty clear. Success now really hinges on, first, immense scale for efficiency and negotiation leverage. Second, flawless vertical integration, meaning owning more pieces of the healthcare puzzle. And third, really smart use of proprietary data analytics to manage costs. This isn't just tweaking the business model. It's a fundamental shift in how these companies have to operate to, frankly, survive and thrive. It's about controlling that healthcare dollar more directly, not just processing payments.
And this big shift, the sources say, is causing a kind of split, a bifurcation in the sector. Two different paths are emerging. On one side, you've got these integrated, data-driven platforms. United Health Group, UNH, is the prime example. Mm-hmm. They're building these defensive moats, the report calls them, by controlling more of the healthcare spend themselves. They're not just insurers anymore, right? They're way deeper into care delivery.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
That integration lets them manage the total cost of care within their own system, not just pay external providers. Huge advantage. Then on the other side of this split, you have the more traditional government-focused plans.
Mm-hmm.
These companies might still be large, but they're heavily concentrated in areas like Medicare Advantage or Medicaid. They face way more margin pressure because they're directly exposed to state and federal reimbursement dynamics.
Yeah.
As we'll get into, those are becoming, well, less predictable, more difficult. They just lack that internal control the integrated players are building.
Okay, so with these different paths, what's the overall story on profitability? How are they actually doing financially right now?
Well, the core finding is this sharp normalization and increased volatility in medical loss ratios, or MLRs, after the pandemic. Just quickly, the MLR is the percent of premium spent on claims and quality. It's key for profitability. And this volatility, it's driven by two big things. First, people catching up on care, they deferred, the recoupment of care deferred. Second, and maybe more structurally important, is this higher acuity, sicker Medicaid population left after the eligibility reviews. This creates a significant and persistent mismatch, as the sources put it, with the capitation rate states set in advance. It's squeezing Medicaid plan margins directly. The sort of temporary pandemic benefits are gone. Now it's sustained pressure.
And it's not just financials. Regulation is shifting dramatically, too. The sources point out it's moving beyond just watching the money, like MLR rules. Now it's direct intervention in how they operate. We're talking prior authorization reforms. That was always a key, if controversial, cost tool, and the No Surprises Act. What's the impact of these kinds of changes?
It's really a classic double whammy. These changes increase their administrative and compliance costs, right? But at the same time, they weaken the very tools MCOs use to manage medical spending. It's like trying to run a race with weights on your ankles while also being told you can't use your best stride. And this is exactly why vertical integration has become so critical.
Right, that makes sense. Which brings us neatly to market structure. Vertical integration isn't just a nice to have anymore. The sources call it a competitive necessity. Why is having those captive provider networks, PBMs, health services arms like Optum at UNH or Carelon at Elevance, why is that giving them such a durable edge?
Because they control more of the ecosystem, plain and simple. It allows them to manage the total cost of care internally, influence pathways, keep referrals in-house, rather than just reacting to external charges. This gives them a crucial buffer against some of those regulatory headwinds we just discussed, and also against disruption from new competitors. When you own the system, you can standardize, optimize, really influence costs in a way a traditional insurer just can't. It's a powerful defensive moat.
Okay, so let's give a quick first look at how the sources rate the big players and the risks. There seems to be a clear tiering. United Health Group gets an outperform mainly due to that unmatched scale and vertical integration, though they do note the risk of regulatory scrutiny because they're so big. Then you've got Elevance Health and CVS Health at market perform. Elevance has that strong Blue Cross brand and the growing Carelon arm, kind of a balanced profile. CVS with Aetna has this unique retail health play but faces challenges integrating everything, complex execution. And then on the other end, Humana, Molina Healthcare, and Centene Corporation are rated underperform. This points to higher vulnerability. Humana is heavily into Medicare Advantage, making it super sensitive to policy changes there. Molina and Centene, they're very Medicaid-focused, so they're exposed to those tough state reimbursement dynamics, and crucially, they lack that deep vertical integration compared to the others.
And that tiering is really backed up by the quantitative risk modeling the sources preview. It shows a clear difference in resilience. Diversified players like UNH, they can absorb shocks much better. But the focused players, like Humana and Medicare Advantage, are extremely vulnerable to specific policy hits. Same for the Medicaid-centric ones like Molina and Centene. They're most at risk if state rates don't keep up. The report uses an example. A 200 basis point, that's 2 percentage points jump in MLR, hits the earnings of those less diversified plans disproportionately hard. It's not just theory, it's stark financial vulnerability. A small MLR shift can mean a huge bottom line impact. 2. The shifting financial bedrock of managed care.
All right, let's dig a bit deeper into that medical loss ratio, the MLR, because it really is the core number for underwriting profit. It tells you how much premium money goes to actual care versus admin or profit. It's like the financial heartbeat of an MCO. Now, the pandemic created this weird whiplash effect on MLRs. Back in 2020, MLRs dropped sharply, almost artificially. Why? People were putting off care lockdowns, COVID fears, you name it. Like, in the individual market, the average MLR fell way down to 72%. That's far below the 80% ACA threshold. And that led to something interesting. MCOs had to pay out record rebates later on. The sources mentioned $2.5 billion in rebates paid in 2019 alone because the ACA uses a three-year rolling average. So that low 2020 MLR meant big payouts later, a strange temporary situation.
Exactly. But that dip was followed by a sharp rebound. People started getting the care they'd put off that recoupment started in 2021, went through 2022. Surgeries, checkups, diagnostics. This drove MLRs back up, sometimes even higher than before the pandemic. This return to more normal and higher utilization has basically reset the baseline profitability. That temporary margin boost from 2020, gone. Just to give you a solid number on that shift, UnitedHealthcare's consolidated MLR went from 79.1% in 2020 up to 85.5% in 2024. That's over 6 percentage points. For a company that big, even a small shift means hundreds of millions in profit difference. It reset the whole industry baseline.
And it's important to realize this MLR pressure isn't the same everywhere, right? It hits different segments differently based on who's insured and how they get paid, which parts of the business are feeling the most heat.
What really jumps out is Medicaid. That segment is facing the most acute, most structural pressure, mostly because of the unwinding of the COVID continuous enrollment rule starting back in April 2023. What basically happened is, as states checked eligibility again, millions of healthier, lower-cost members were dropped. This left MCOs with a remaining group that's, on average, sicker and needs more care, higher acuity. And the MCOs are saying the state capitation rates, which are set ahead of time based on old data, just haven't kept up with the higher costs of this new risk pool. Direct margin squeeze. For example, early 2024 data showed Centene's Medicaid MLR hitting 92.3%. Molina's at 90.3%. That's high. And this isn't just a blip. It's a structural change in who's covered. It'll keep pressure on Medicaid margins until rates fully adjust, which could take, 12, maybe even 24 months.
Wow, okay. And it's not just Medicaid struggling. Even Medicare Advantage, MA, which used to be the golden goose, is seeing costs rise.
Yeah, that's right. The big insurers are seeing higher than expected use among seniors, especially outpatient stuff. Okay. Maybe catching up on care they delayed too. Humana, huge in MA, really felt it. Their benefit ratio jumped 2.5 percentage points in 2024, up to almost 90%. They specifically pointed to these higher medical cost trends. It shows even the historically strong segments are feeling the pinch.
So, okay, costs are rising across the board. What are the biggest underlying drivers of this medical cost inflation we're seeing everywhere?
Well, several things are pushing costs up. Beyond just more people getting care, there's significant unit cost inflation. Hospitals, doctors, they want higher rates because their own costs, like labor and supplies, are up. But maybe the biggest long-term headache is prescription drug spending. Especially those super expensive specialty drugs. Get this statistic. Net spending on Medicaid drugs jumped an estimated 72% between fiscal 2017 and 2023, almost entirely driven by new, high-cost therapies. It just shows the constant battle MCOs have keeping premiums tracking with costs that are accelerating. It's like trying to fill a leaky bucket, isn't it? Costs pour out faster than you can put the revenue in.
Given those rising costs, how do MCOs manage pricing? How do they ensure premium adequacy in such a regulated and competitive world?
In Medicaid, it's this really complex actuarial process. State agencies set the rates. Federal rules say they have to be actuarially sound, cover reasonable costs, admin, profit. But the process is inherently backward-looking. It uses historical data, so it often misses rapid shifts, like that post-unwinding acuity spike we talked about. This creates a significant lag. MCOs end up absorbing costs until rates catch up next cycle, which can be tough negotiating with states facing budget issues. They're often playing catch-up.
But the commercial market must be different, more flexibility there.
Yes. Commercial pricing is more about market dynamics. MCOs with big local market share can negotiate more favorable discounts from providers. That lets them offer better premiums. And this ties right back to consolidation and vertical integration. Owning the providers gives you a more direct way to control unit costs, not just negotiate rates after the fact. It's a stronger form of pricing power. Now, switching gears slightly, for MCOs and Medicare Advantage, the Star Ratings program from CMS has become absolutely critical. Huge financial implications. Plans hitting 4.0 stars or more get a quality bonus payment, the QBP. It's about a 5% bump to their benchmark rate. Fall below 4.0, you lose the bonus. Big revenue hit. For 2025, the government is projected to spend at least $12.7 billion on these bonuses. So you see how much money is tied to quality performance here. It's a massive financial lever.
That sounds potentially great for MCOs, right? Predictable bonuses for quality. But the sources hint things have gotten shaky on the star ratings front. What's the latest twist?
Yeah, predictable isn't quite the word anymore. For years, scores were pretty stable, even improving. But now, different ballgame. The end of those COVID-era policies that actually protected plans from bad scores, plus CMS using a tougher methodology like getting rid of certain statistical outliers, which effectively raised the bar, has created what the sources call a ratings cliff. The average star rating for 2024, which dictates 2025 payments, fell to its lowest point since 2015. That's a major shift. And the impact on big players, dramatic. For the 2025 payment year, the percentage of MA members in plans with 4-plus stars just plummeted, went from 79% down to 62%. Look at Humana. Historically high rated, they had a huge contract covering 45% of their MA members drop from 4.5 stars down to 3.5 stars. It puts a massive chunk of QBP revenue at risk, hundreds of millions potentially. So suddenly, star ratings went from being this reliable boost to a significant risk factor. And when you lose those QBPs, MCOs face tough choices. Absorb the margin hit, cut benefits, which makes plans less attractive, or raise premiums, which hurts enrollment. It's a real bind.
Okay, moving away from the big revenue and cost items. What's a less obvious but still vital sign of an MCO's operational health? Something about working capital and efficiency. The sources mentioned days claims payable, or DCP. What does that tell us?
That's right. DCP is basically the average time it takes an MCO to pay its medical bills. A stable DCP suggests things are running smoothly. Good claims processing, decent provider relations. Efficiency. If that number starts bouncing around, it can signal problems, maybe claims backlogs, or maybe they're strategically managing cash. For example, UNH reported 47 days for 2024, but had some quarterly swings because of that. Change Healthcare cyber attack, we'll get to that. CVS Health was around 44 days. Molina was 48 days, generally in the same ballpark.
So what's the red flag? If those DCP numbers suddenly jump up or down significantly, what should you think?
Well, a sharp increase might mean they're falling behind on paying claims.
Yeah.
That can really damage provider relationships, lead to disputes. Not good. A sudden drop could be strategic, maybe paying providers faster to keep them happy, but it could also put a strain on their short-term cash. Just for context, Illinois apparently tracks this and reports about 97% of claims get handled within 30 days there. So while DCP seems like a small detail, its stability is a key indicator of operational discipline. 3. Navigating the gauntlet of regulatory and policy headwinds.
All right, let's pivot to the regulatory maze MCOs have to navigate. State budgets, especially for Medicaid, seem like a perennial battleground. Medicaid is huge for many MCOs, but it comes with big risks around getting paid enough. How's that tension playing out now?
Yeah, putting this into context, that whole Medicaid redetermination process, where millions lost coverage, really cranked up the tension. MCOs keep saying the folks still on Medicaid are generally sicker, using more services. But many states have been slow to adjusting those capitation rates upwards to match. So MCOs are stuck covering higher costs without higher premiums. And this is happening against a backdrop of potential federal budget pressure. There are proposals out there, like this One Big Beautiful Bill Act, or OBBA, that could cut federal Medicaid funding to states by, like, over $900 billion over 10 years. States like New York, California, they'd face huge funding losses. They might be forced to take an even harder line in rate negotiations with MCOs. I mean, these MCOs are kind of squeezed between rising costs and rates that aren't keeping up.
And it's not just the rates themselves, is it? There's this growing issue of MLR remittances in Medicaid. Can you break that down?
Right. So while the main ACA rebate rules hit commercial plans, a similar idea is spreading in Medicaid. Federal rules push states to set rates so MCOs should hit an 85% MLR. And our sources say most MCO states, 34 of them, as of mid-2024, now make MCOs pay money back if their MLR is too low, meaning they spent less than 85% on care. This effectively caps their profits in Medicaid. It lets states claw back payments if costs end up lower than expected, reducing the upside for MCOs significantly. It's another way states keep financial control.
Okay, let's talk prior authorization, PA. It's always been this most effective and most controversial tool for MCOs to control costs by approving care beforehand. But it sounds like PA is under serious attack now from regulators at all levels because patients and doctors hate the delays. What's the fallout?
Oh, the fallout is substantial. There's this big CMS interoperability and prior authorization final rule kicking in from 2026. It sets strict deadlines, 72 hours for urgent requests, 7 calendar days for standard ones, that's for MA, Medicaid, Marketplace plans. And crucially, it forces payers to build and use these tech standards FHIR-based APIs to automate the whole PA process. The financial hit is twofold. First, increased administrative costs. They need substantial technology investments for these APIs, plus probably more staff for the faster timelines. Second, and probably bigger, increased medical costs. The whole point of PA reform is fewer barriers, which almost certainly means higher utilization. The CBO estimated a similar idea just for MA would cost the government $16 billion more over 10 years, purely for more care being used. Another study by Milliman for Blue Cross Blue Shield backs this up. It really takes away a key cost lever.
And on top of the federal rules, states are getting even more aggressive, right? Places like Indiana, Montana, Wyoming are passing laws with even faster turnarounds, special review requirements, and these gold card programs that just exempt some doctors from PA entirely. What's the collective effect?
Collectively, these reforms are systematically dismantling a core cost containment tool. It exposes MCOs to higher medical bills while also adding to their administrative workload. It's a fundamental shift forcing them to find savings elsewhere or just eat the higher costs. Really complicates managing profitability. And beyond PA, there is the No Surprises Act, been in effect since early 2022. Aimed to protect us from those crazy out-of-network bills. It's worked for patients, but it's added complexity and cost for MCOs. And it shifted the power balance in network negotiations. How? Well, the NSA took away the threat of hitting patients with massive surprise bills. That was a key bargaining chip for out-of-network providers trying to get better in-network deals. Without that leverage, their power weakened relative to payers.
Okay, so less leverage for providers. Sounds like it could be good for MCO costs, but the sources say compliance is still expensive for them.
It is. MCOs had to build new systems, dedicate significant administrative resources just to handle the dispute resolution process of EIDR. And surprisingly, the number of disputes filed has been far higher than anyone expected. Just look at the cost. The admin fee to even start an EIDR case has more than doubled, from $50 to $115 per side. Plus, the NSA has led to intensified network adequacy scrutiny. Regulators are using tougher standards, more aggressive monitoring like secret shopper calls to check if provider directories are accurate and appointments are available. If MCOs fail these checks, they face corrective action plans and financial penalties. Another layer of compliance cost and risk. It feels like a constant regulatory treadmill. 410, market structure and the battle for dominance. What's really striking here is just how concentrated this market has become. I mean, the whole managed care landscape now is about intense competition, yes, but also relentless consolidation and that huge trend of vertical integration. An MCO's ability to build and defend a dominant position is absolutely key to its long-term survival. The sources point out that just the five largest for-profit players, Centene, Elevance, United Health, Molina, CVS Health, they cover over half of all Medicaid MCO members nationwide. That's incredible market power in just one segment.
And that national number probably hides even more concentration locally, doesn't it?
Oh, absolutely. Take Medicare Advantage. In 2024, a staggering 97% of U.S. counties were rated highly concentrated or very highly concentrated. United Healthcare and Humana, they dominate. They have the largest share in something like two-thirds of all counties. Often it's basically a duopoly locally. Think about Allegheny County, Pennsylvania, Pittsburgh. Highmark and UPMC insure almost 85% of everyone there. That level of local dominance gives them enormous power.
And that concentration translates into real competitive advantages, right? And how does it actually help the dominant MCOs?
It means immense leverage in contract negotiations with doctors and hospitals. They can demand lower payment rates that smaller plans just can't get. This lets them offer more competitive premiums, which attracts more members and employers, which reinforces their market position. It's this virtuous cycle. It also creates formidable barriers to entry for anyone trying to break in. Scale begets scale, basically.
Which brings us back to maybe the biggest structural change of all, vertical integration. Owning the providers as a competitive moat. Why has this become so absolutely central?
Well, the thinking is pretty compelling. Traditionally, MCOs and providers often had this adversarial relationship, right?
Yeah.
Fighting over payments, utilization management. But if the MCO owns the provider groups, they can shift from external control, like denying claims, to internal management. They can influence clinical pathways, standardize protocols, manage referrals within their own ecosystem. The goal, control the total cost of care. And this is a direct reaction to those regulatory headwinds we talked about. As regulators clamp down on tools like prior authorization, owning the care delivery side becomes a critical, perhaps the only remaining lever for effective medical cost management. It creates that powerful defensive moat against regulations and margin pressure.
And the sheer scale of this integration is reshaping healthcare. Can you give us some concrete examples of who's doing what?
You bet. Look at United Health Group and Optum. Optum is now the biggest employer of doctors in the U.S. Over 90,000 affiliated are employed. They've bought up everything. Primary care, specialists, surgery centers, home health, building a care delivery empire. Then there's CVS Health. After buying Aetna, they went big into care delivery. Bought Oak Street Health for primary care, Signify Health for in-home assessments. They're building this integrated system around their huge retail pharmacy network, Humana. With their CenterWell brand, they're expanding senior-focused primary care clinics and home health, mainly for their MA members. And Elevance Health is building its Carelon Services arm with its own PBM and growing care delivery assets like Paragon Healthcare. This isn't just a minor trend. It's a fundamental reshaping of these companies from just payers into player providers. But even with all this consolidation, new threats are popping up. Take direct primary care, DPC. That's the model where patients or employers pay a flat monthly fee directly to a doctor's office, skipping insurance for basic care. It's still small, but its appeal is better access, stronger doctor-patient relationships. The risk for MCOs, it could siphon off healthier populations, making the main insurance pool sicker, and maybe worsen the primary care doctor shortage for MCO networks.
And what about telehealth? That exploded during the pandemic, didn't it? How are MCOs dealing with that disruption?
Yeah, the telehealth boom created a whole new competitive front. Standalone virtual care companies now compete directly with MCO networks for certain services. So MCOs are basically being forced by states and the market to integrate telehealth much more deeply themselves. They have to enhance their own virtual options, figure out clear payment rules. They can't ignore it. They have to adapt. And beyond those specific models, you've got this whole ecosystem of health tech startups, chronic disease management, data analytics. Some want to partner with MCOs, sure, but others aim to compete directly selling to employers or consumers. So putting all this digital reliance together, what does it mean for risk?
It creates huge cybersecurity risk. The sources hammer this point home, highlighting the 2024 cyber attack on UnitedHealth's Change Healthcare Unit. It basically crippled claims and payments across the entire U.S. healthcare system. A stark warning. The average cost of a big healthcare cyber attack is already millions, but something systemic like Change, the impact is orders of magnitude greater. It shows a massive vulnerability, even for the biggest players, in the super interconnected digital world. Via comparative deep dive, pre-filing the MCO leaders. Okay, so given all these pressures, financial, regulatory, market shifts, it's really clear the MCO sector isn't one size fits all. Each of the big six publicly traded players has a different model, focus, and risk profile. So this section is about digging into why some seem better positioned than others based on what our sources say.
Right. Let's start with United Health Group, UNH. The sources pretty clearly frame this as the best-in-class model. Why? It's the synergy between United Healthcare, the giant insurer, and Optum, its fast-growing health services arm. Optum isn't just supporting the insurance side, it's a huge profit driver itself. Pharmacy benefits, data tech, and direct patient care. Employing all those doctors lets them manage costs more effectively, push value-based care internally. Financially, UNH shows consistent, strong, diversified growth. Revenue's over $400 billion. Yeah, their MLR is up, but it's seen as well-managed, showing those internal controls work. Their DCP is stable, even with the Change mess. Great cash flow lets them return a lot to shareholders, strategically. Keep feeding Optum, making tuck-in acquisitions of provider groups, expanding that value-based model. They also have a strong ESG profile, though their sheer size always attracts regulatory attention.
Okay, next up. Elevance Health, ELV. Their model seems more like a hybrid, combining local strength with national services. Yeah, they're the biggest Blue Cross Blue Shield licensee. That gives them that trusted blue brand exclusively in 14 states' deep local market presence. And they're balancing that with their growing Carelon Health Services arm, includes their PBM, CarelonRx, and care delivery assets like Paragon Healthcare. Financially, strong revenue growth over $175 billion in 2024. But their benefit expense ratio did tick up, mainly from higher costs in their large Medicaid business. They seem efficient, though. Good debt-to-capital ratio, low DCP. Strategy looks like growing organically in their core markets while making smart buys for Carelon. They also get strong ESG marks, negligible risk rating, net zero goals.
Then we've got CVS Health, Aetna, CVS. This one's described as a bold experiment, trying to create this integrated consumer-facing healthcare giant. You've got Aetna, the insurer, Caremark, the big PBM, and the massive CVS retail pharmacy network. Their strategy is this front door to healthcare idea, using stores for care delivery. Plus, they bought Oak Street Health for primary care and Signify Health for in-home care, really pushing vertical integration. Financially, huge total revenues, over $370 billion. But profitability in the core insurance part, under severe pressure, their medical benefit ratio shot way up in 2024. Why? High Medicare use, bad star ratings, sicker Medicaid members, their healthcare benefit segment's operating income just cratered. DCP is managed okay. Strategically, it's all about M&A for care delivery, but success depends heavily on integrating all these pieces. The sources flat out say execution risk is high. Great vision, maybe, but huge practical challenges. They have solid ESG goals, too.
All right, let's talk Humana, HUM. They're the most focused player, right? Almost all in on Medicare Advantage. Yes, MA is about 80% of their revenue. That focus built a strong brand with seniors, boosted by their central arm doing senior primary care and home health. Financially, though, that MA focus makes them very sensitive to MA trends. Their benefit ratio climbed in 2024, reflecting that higher senior utilization trend across the industry. But the critical thing, they face a significant revenue headwind in 2025 and 2026 because their star ratings tanked. Losing those quality bonus payments for a big chunk of members is a major problem. They've even guided for MA membership to decline significantly in 2025. That tells you the impact. Strategically, their outlook is totally tied to the future of the MA program and how it gets paid. ESG-wise, they focus on health equity for seniors.
Okay, then Molina Healthcare, MOH. Molina is a specialist in government programs, mostly Medicaid. That's about 80% of the revenue. Their game plan is managing complex populations and growing by winning state contracts or buying smaller plans. But unlike the giants, Molina has a much less developed vertical integration strategy. They're more like a traditional health plan. Financially, their fate is tied to that Medicaid rate cycle. Their 2024 medical care ratio was high, hit by those sicker members after redeterminations. Margins are thin, very vulnerable to states cutting rates. DCP is okay, strategically. Heavy focus on M&A to get bigger in Medicaid. But the sources see a long-term challenge, competing against the big, vertically integrated players who can manage costs better internally. Their ESG focus is naturally on serving vulnerable groups.
And finally, Centene Corporation, CNC. the nation's biggest Medicaid MCO, also big in the ACA marketplaces. Their model is built on that huge scale in government programs. They're in the middle of a significant strategic transformation right now, selling off international stuff to focus on the U.S. business and boost profits. Financially, they're facing the same Medicaid acuity pressures as Molina high health benefits ratio in 2024. They've also really struggled in Medicare Advantage. Bad star ratings hurt their margins there, even with some revenue growth. Their DCP is the highest of the group, maybe suggesting some operational friction. They have this value creation plan trying to cut admin costs, improve margins. Strategically, it's about stabilizing Medicaid marketplace, fixing MMA, reducing debt, buying back stock. Like Molina, their core business serves vulnerable populations. Long-term investment thesis and risk scenario analysis. Okay, so let's wrap this all up. What does it mean for the long haul in managed care? The sources really stress that the investment case now depends entirely on an MCO's ability to adapt to this fundamentally altered landscape, that era of easy growth. Just managing utilization tightly, it's basically over. The future, they argue, belongs to MCOs that can successfully run this gauntlet and become truly integrated systems managing the total cost of care, not just processing bills.
And this brings up an important question. Why is value-based care, VBC, so hard for traditional MCOs, even though everyone says it's the future? Moving from fee-for-service to VBC is central U.S. policy, but it's tricky for non-integrated plans. The core problem is the wrong pocket problem. Imagine an MCO invests heavily in prevention for its members. Great for the members, they get healthier. But if they switch plans next year, the original MCO paid for the intervention, but the competitor gets the benefit of a lower-cost member. Only vertically integrated MCOs that own the providers can reliably capture those long-term VBC savings because the patient is more likely to stay within their system. It solves that wrong pocket issue, giving them a huge edge in a VBC world.
And it's not just VBC. The sources talk about the futility of offsetting inflation with administrative efficiency. MCOs are automating claims, trying to cut admin costs, but it seems like that won't be enough to counter rising medical costs and those weakened cost management tools. Can you unpack that?
Sure. The savings from admin efficiency, they're measured in tenths of a percent, maybe a full percent if they're lucky. But the potential increase in medical costs from inflation, specialty drugs, less PA, that's measured in whole percentage points. It's like trying to bail out a sinking boat with a teacup. The most sustainable offset to medical inflation won't come from just trimming admin fat. It has to come from the structural advantages of owning the care delivery assets, managing the cost of care directly at the source. That's the only way to really stem the outflow. This also ties into how MCOs might fare under hypothetical Medicare for All scenarios. Now, a full switch to a government single-payer system would be an existential threat to private insurance as we know it, no more private premiums. But realistically, the government probably couldn't instantly take over managing the whole U.S. healthcare system administratively. So in that kind of scenario, the biggest, most efficient MCOs, especially those already acting as administrators for big companies like UNH and Elevance, they'd likely be repurposed as contracted administrators for the government plan. Their networks, systems, data skills would be essential. The smaller, less diversified players, they'd probably get bought out or just disappear. They lack that underlying operational scale and utility.
And looking ahead, MCOs seem uniquely positioned to be central hubs in the digital health world too. Their data, their member relationships, that makes them key partners for innovators, right? Especially the integrated ones.
It's exactly. Vertically integrated MCOs have a clear advantage here. They can pilot, purchase, and scale new digital health solutions directly within their own provider networks. This speeds up adoption and makes sure the financial benefits flow back to the parent company. It's a closed loop for innovation that traditional MCOs, just contracting externally, don't have. And to really drive home the different risk levels, the sources include this quantitative risk modeling. They look at five bad scenarios and estimated the EPS hit for each MCO. The results really show the divergence, like scenario one, a 200 basis point MLR deterioration, a big unexpected jump in medical costs. Who gets hit hardest? Companies with lower baseline margins and lots of premium revenue, significant profit hit. Or, scenario two, a 15% cut in Medicare Advantage benchmark rates. Politically driven funding cut for MA. This would be, quote, catastrophic for Humana because MA is 80% of their business. Huge EPS impact. Also hurts UNH and CVS Aetna significantly. Medicaid plans, mostly shielded from that one.
What about that cyber risk we mentioned?
Scenario three, major cybersecurity breach. Models the financial fallout. The impact scales with size and complexity. So UNH and CVS, with their huge digital systems, face the biggest potential financial damage. It's a very real growing threat. Scenario four, adverse risk adjustment ruling. This assumes a court ruling clause backs some past risk adjustment money. Hits companies big in MA and the ACA marketplace's hardest, UNH, Human, Centene rely heavily on that. And Scenario 5, economic recession. This model's a double whammy. More people join Medicaid, good for revenue, but states cut Medicaid rates, bad for margins. This hurts the Medicaid-focused players like Molina and Centene disproportionately. More diversified MCOs handle it better. These scenarios really highlight how crucial diversification and integration are for resilience.
Okay, so pulling it all together, the analysis points to a clear, tiered conclusion. The MCOs that went hard on vertical integration and diversification, they're just on much firmer ground. Tier 1, outperform United Health Group, UNH. Sources confirm their model, Big Insurer plus High Growth Optum Services, is the clear best in class. Diversification, internal cost control, it provides a durable defense. Their strength in the risk scenarios backs this up. Tier 2, market perform, Elevance Health, ELV. That strong local Blue Cross brand plus the growing Carelon services make them solid, on the right path, but still behind UNH on integration scope. Also tier 2, CVS Health, Aetna, CVS. Sources call the vision compelling insurance, PBM, retail altogether, but the execution risk, immense. They're dealing with severe margin pressure while trying to digest huge acquisitions. Potential's there, but the path is uncertain, risky near term, a high stakes bet. And tier 3, underperform, Humana, HUM, that MA focus was a strength, now is their greatest vulnerability. The star ratings hit, plus constant MA policy risk, just too high relative to others. And then Molina Healthcare, MOH, and Centene Corporation, CNC. These Medicaid specialists are right on the front lines of the industry's most acute challenges. State budgets, acuity mismatch. They have scale in their niche, but the lack of meaningful vertical integration leaves them fewer options to fight margin compression. They're basically price takers when the price setters, the states, are squeezed.
So connecting this to the big picture, the long-term outlook is really one of divergence. The integrated giants likely keep consolidating share, leveraging scale, becoming these dominant, almost utility-like healthcare systems. But the smaller, less integrated government-focused plans, they face a much more arduous path. A constant fight for adequate margins against all these structural headwinds. It really is a story of the strong getting stronger while the specialists struggle.
So to quickly recap our deep dive today, the MCO sector is truly at an inflection point, facing major financial and regulatory heat from all sides. And the key to resilience, to long-term value, it seems undeniably to be vertical integration and controlling that total cost of care.
Which leaves us with a big question for you to think about. As healthcare keeps shifting towards these huge integrated systems, what role will they ultimately play? Will they just define how we pay for care? Or will they fundamentally change how care is actually delivered and how we as patients experience it? Will they be the answer to costs and outcomes? Or will their sheer size create entirely new challenges?
Definitely something to chew on. Thanks for diving deep with us today. Until next time, keep asking those big questions.